Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Business Book Show. And today, our guest is Joanna Penn. Now, if you've done any kind of search on Google looking for how to write or how to be an author, you've probably come across Joanna Penn at some point or another. Or you might be more familiar with if you like to read thrillers. She's also a best-selling author, New York Times, as well as USA Today, writing thrillers under the pen name of J.F. Penn, P-E-N-N. And that really is her last name. This is not not a nom de plume or anything like that, or some cute, her last name really is Penn. But on the other side, the nonfiction side, she's also she's written a number of nonfiction books for authors. She's an incredible creative entrepreneur. She is actually also an international speaker, and her site for authors like us is thecreativepen.com. Regularly voted one of the top 10 sites for writers and self-publishers. You've probably come across it, I'm sure, yourself already. And one of her books, How to Make a Living with Your Writing, was one of Inc. Magazine's top 100 business books in 2015. So I'm quite pleased that we've got the opportunity to talk with one of the industry's leading figures today. Joanna, thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, thanks for having me on the show, Derek, and what a lovely introduction.
We try to make everybody feel as special as they are. And it's publishing seems like a huge industry, but whenever you start getting into it, and I guess this is probably like any other industry, you realize that it's kind of a small world. So I was introduced to you by way of Grant McDooling, one of Australia's leading ghostwriters. And that's how I came to find, well, that's one of the, that's the way that I was personally introduced to you. Of course, I'd come across your site and your books before that. But it's a small world, isn't it, that here I am in South Louisiana. I get connected to a ghostwriter in Australia, and then that leads me to being introduced to a writer there in the UK.
Oh, yeah. And I think that's what's so awesome about publishing now at this time in history, because with the internet, we can both talk to each other across the world, but also we can reach readers across the world. So when I met Grant, I was living in Australia, and I was actually making most of my money in US dollars selling books to Americans. And my website, I was scheduling my social media into the American time zones. And now, of course, I'm in Britain and do things like this and work with people all over the world. So I think we're, the opportunities right now for business writers and fiction writers and all kinds of writers, I mean, it is one of the best livings you can have, because you can work across so many time zones and sell books in, I think you can actually now sell books in 190 countries, and I've actually sold books in 83 countries. So that gives it gives a sense of how big the market can be now. It really is a global market for sales as well as connections.
Yeah, it is. It's a wonderful time to be an author. And I know that, if you read any of the industry journals and publishing related articles, that a lot of publishers and traditional professionals in the industry are lamenting how much things have changed. And it's true. But I mean, that's true in any industry. That's been true just pick an industry: healthcare, IT, engineering. Everything has changed because of technology. And if you're still trying to do things the old way, then yes, it's going to be hard, because every industry has fundamentally changed because of the barriers to entry technology has brought down. But if, on the other hand, you embrace it as you so ably have, then I think that it's a wonderful time, because people like you and me don't have to be chained to any one particular geography or in any one particular medium. I mean, you can really just create whatever kind of career that you want to have. And you have done a masterful job of that by blending the nonfiction side, the fiction side, as well as being an entrepreneur in your own right.
Well, I think, you know, as we've said, you do have the opportunity. And publishing particularly is interesting in terms of the disruption, if you compare it to something like music, because it's quite similar in that there are these creative artists. And once upon a time, you had to have a big label and they had to put your record out and it was a physical record and people got it in physical stores. And, you know, there was pretty much no other way to make a living as a musician. And then the music industry was heavily disrupted by obviously the MP3 format with the iTunes store, in the same way now publishing being disrupted by Amazon and the Kindle format and ebooks really taking off. And I don't know if you and your audience know this, but this year it's the 10-year anniversary. So this year, as we record this in 2017, is the 10-year anniversary of both the iPhone and the Kindle. So it's...
Is it really?
Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
Wow.
And you almost can't remember a time before iPhone or the Kindle. And if you think, I mean, if you just take those two devices, even if your listeners don't read on the Kindle, for example, but just think about the smartphone and how that has changed how people consume information and entertainment and how they shop. I mean, some of the big behaviors of our society are shaped by digital, not just books. So even if, you know, you love print books, you possibly still shop for them online, and most people most people don't actually live near a physical bookstore. You know, America far more than Britain, you know, people do live a longer way away from bigger stores, so you know, people often shop online. And one of the technological changes, obviously the Kindle was the big shift for independent authors like myself, where you can reach readers directly. But print-on-demand technology, particularly good for business authors, because I actually sell a lot of my non-fiction books in print. So if you are a business author, then having a print book is definitely necessary. And print-on-demand technology through a company like CreateSpace, which is Amazon's, or Ingram Spark, which will get you into bookstores and all of that type of thing, you can upload your digital files. And then if someone orders the book on barnesandnoble.com or amazon.com or in a bookstore on Baker & Taylor, or whatever, that one book will be printed and sent to the customer. So you don't have to warehouse, you don't have to go to the post office. I mean, that technology on its own, that can be life-changing for people, because business books, you know, over 10 years ago, you did actually have to do a print run, put it in a warehouse, and then the margin you could make on those books was tiny. Whereas now you can do your print run if you want to, but then you can also have books available print on demand all over the world. And I mean, that's just incredible. So I hope people are aware that it's not just things like marketing and podcasts, but it's also distribution that's exciting. So maybe we'll come on to audiobooks, for example, but there's so many possibilities.
Yeah, I mean, even for someone like me with the business book Bible, it's such a niche audience that I didn't even try to go through a traditional publisher, because I didn't think that they would even look at it, because the market for it is so slim. And as an independent myself, I mean, I couldn't afford to print, you know, to have everything created and then to take the files to a press and do a print run of, you know, 1,000 books or 5,000 books. So I did exactly what you're suggesting. I put them up on Ingram Spark and CreateSpace. And so now I can compete with someone who is traditionally published without having that huge upfront investment and having the books sit in a warehouse or my garage. And then every time someone buys one off of my website or somewhere, go run to the post office and ship it to them and be my own distribution center. I wouldn't have even tried. I'd have had to do something quite different. So it's amazing. It lets people like us outsource our distribution, our printing, all of that to you know, these companies that can do economies of scale, and then let them take care of the mailing and the postage and the returns and all of it. It's again, it is an amazing time to be an author.
And a little trick in case people aren't doing this, but one of the things you should be doing, you know, if you have a website, and I imagine most of your audience will have a website where they're selling their books and services, as most business, you know, writers have other products that they like to sell. But definitely if you're using a link to Amazon, then join the Amazon affiliate program at Amazon Associates. And what I'm sure your audience know what affiliate sales are, you know, you get a percentage of commission on things that are bought. So you get a percentage on, if someone buys your book, you'll get an extra few cents. But what's nice about the Amazon affiliate program is you have a 24-hour cookie, which means anything else they buy from Amazon in the next 24 hours, you actually get a percentage of. So for authors with traffic to their websites, using an Amazon affiliate link on your website is a great way to make extra income. And, you know, I often tell
people, I had no clue.
Oh, there you go.
Very cool.
There's a new thing for you. And like when I first started out, my first affiliate check for like 2 months was $1.53. So you can't expect it to be big at first. But now, you know, now I make, you know, probably $5,000 a year from affiliate money, which is not something you turn down. So, and that is just from, for the last, you know, 9 years, adding every link on my website that is a book link, or, right, you know, things that I use on my site, things like noise cancelling headphones, for example, you know, anything that I use as part of my life that I could buy on Amazon, I link to it with an affiliate link. And that just, you know, brings income over time. So it's just a little tip for people. And you can set up a multi-directional link, that if, you know, if I logged in, I'd see it amazon.co.uk, and if an American logs in, they see amazon.com. If you go to booklinker.net, you can set that up and put your affiliate links in there for your own book. So that's quite handy too.
Oh, that is too cool. Thank you for sharing that. I will absolutely jump on that. Well, Joanna, let's talk about actually writing. I mean, you're a prolific writer. You've written so many books on both the nonfiction and the fiction side. Let's talk about the nonfiction side for a minute. How do you, and you are uniquely, not qualified. You are able to offer a unique perspective, is what I was trying to say, on the different approaches of writing a nonfiction book versus writing a fiction book. So there are so many books and resources out there on how to write your romance novel, how to write the next best crime thriller, how to write a novel. But you've done both and quite successfully. So can you talk about just how that looks and compare the two?
Well, I think nonfiction actually is easier to write. So I'm happy for everyone listening. and essentially for me, I tend to write what I'm interested in and what I think my audience will want. So this is a massive difference often between nonfiction and fiction. So most nonfiction writers are writing to a market. So either they already have a business, they have a target audience, you know, maybe they have a blog about dogs and they decide, right, I'm going to write a book that my audience of dog lovers will enjoy, and write a book on, say, pet care, for example. That's just one example. But most nonfiction writers do write to market in that way. And that is great because you can often sell more books in that direction. So you have a book about, you know, business books for an audience that you also have a podcast for and an actual business around. Very, very sensible. So that's the first thing, is to think about, well, what do my audience want? So my audience are authors. So the books I'm just releasing this week, a book called How to Market a Book, which is obviously something my audience want. How to Make a Living with Your Writing is another example. So my books for nonfiction are aimed at an audience, and they are titled in a way that the audience knows what they're going to get. They understand the promise to the reader. And this is probably a big issue with some nonfiction writers who aren't famous. So if you're famous, like Malcolm Gladwell, or, you know, some of the more famous nonfiction writers, you can get away with funky titles, or if you have a huge marketing budget, like something like Freakonomics, for example. But that, I mean, in itself, actually, Freakonomics is a very good word. You know, I don't know who did their marketing, but it's an excellent word that they came up with there, and now that's their brand. But for most nonfiction authors and most authors listening, you need a book title that tells the reader what they're going to get. So you could have a smart one sentence title with a longer subtitle, but you do have to be very clear so that the audience knows what they're getting. And the second thing is SEO, so search engine optimization. People often understand it as it relates to a website. So, you know, you have articles about business writing and ghostwriting and stuff like that. You don't have articles on organic tomatoes, for example. That's just not your audience. And if you wrote a book on organic tomatoes, you probably wouldn't sell any, because nobody knows that that's what you like, if you like that. So that's the thing. You have to think about search engine optimization for Amazon as a search engine. So the stats vary, but Amazon is one of the top search engines around, and people searching on Amazon are expecting to spend money, whereas people searching on Google are not necessarily expecting to spend money. So this is a really
important point. That's a great point. Mm. Yeah, just even by the platform of choice, differentiating with the different potential audiences.
Yeah, and this is a huge deal, and also something that I've learned. Like, the first book I wrote was called How to Enjoy Your Job or Find a New One. And it wasn't selling very well. And I was like, okay, what's going on here? And then I learned about search engine optimization, and I updated the book and I retitled it and put a new cover on it. And now it's called Career Change. And that book sells much better because people are looking for career change. So that's a big tip. And you can always find these words. If you just go to Amazon.com, change the little search bar to say books or Kindle, and then start typing in a word or a phrase, you're going to get a drop down, and that is going to be what people are searching for. So that is like one of my massive top tips for nonfiction, which is completely not true for fiction, because people don't go onto Amazon and start typing, you know, the name of a novel unless it's famous. They tend to find it through categories. But categories are still important for nonfiction too. But coming back to writing, because that's, I guess some of this is important right up front, because what you don't want to do is sort of write a book which is everything I know about business. You know, that's not going to work. It needs to be specific. So, for example, I have a book which is Business for Authors, How to Be an Author Entrepreneur, which is a very specific book about business for a niche. I've not written Business for Organic Tomato Growers, for example. I like that example. But this is the thing. So when you're thinking about the topic you're going to write for, considering your audience and who is going to buy it and what they want is hugely important.
Right. Those kind of upfront choices that that determine the direction of everything else. Yeah. If you start if you start writing the book on organic tomatoes, as we would say down here in South Louisiana, that's going to be a very different book than you putting your mind towards writing something on your particular niche.
Yeah, and that's going to save you a lot of time if you sort that out up front. And I think probably one of the other massive things for nonfiction is that it doesn't need to be a magnum opus, you know, unless you're going to be a speaker and people. Well, even then, you know, I actually think the trend for nonfiction books is getting shorter. And it's much better, actually, to have multiple short books than it is to have a really long book. So one example is my book, How to Make a Living with Your Writing. It's very short. It's like 27,000 words or something. And it's by far my top selling nonfiction book because it's got a hell of a title. Whereas, you know, the book Business for Authors, How to Be an Author Entrepreneur, that doesn't sell you know, that sells a fraction of the sales of how to make a living with your writing, partly because people don't want to run a business, they want to make a living. So the title is very important, but also it distills a lot of information into a short book. So I think people really like that. So that's a good tip for people as well. You don't need to think about one book that contains everything you know. It would be better to split it into shorter ones.
I think that, that is an incredibly important point. In fact, I use that almost word for word in one of the sections in my book, that your book, your business book that you want to write doesn't have to be your magnum opus. It doesn't have to be the distillation of your life's work, because that's writing your book from the inside out, which is fine for fiction. Or if you want to do a memoir or an autobiography, but whenever you're writing for the nonfiction market, you need to not write, but at least market and package and present your book from the outside in. And people would much rather read a shorter book that is targeted to whatever's on their mind or whatever they're trying to do, versus a huge book that is everything that you know about, you know, writing and publishing and being an author. You know, it's, you could have, I'm sure, probably taken, you know, quite a few pieces of the different books that you've written and put them into a magnum opus, but it wouldn't have sold as well as having a number of targeted books that speak to one particular topic, or, you know, more of a need than trying to present everything you know all in one go.
Yeah, and you have to think about profit as well, because you know, if you have shorter books, you can price them a bit lower because, you know, they're not huge, but you can have more of them. And the way, certainly if you self-publish and you make 70% royalty, if I put a business book up for $4.99, which is, you know, a reasonable price for a non-fiction short book, you know, you can make $4 profit on that as an ebook, and also as a print book, it's much smaller. So you could probably print that for $2 even on CreateSpace. So if you're speaking, so for example, the How to Make a Living with Your Writing, when I do workshops, I will include a print copy as part of the price of the workshop. Even though it's print on demand, I'll just order a ton of them because it's so short, it's very affordable. So these are the types of things you can think about. You know, if you go shorter, you can probably make a higher profit and you can use your book in much more of a sort of a marketing way, and it's quicker. So there's just so many benefits.
So that kind of addresses the, you know, the upfront stuff. Whenever you want to write a book, these are some of the big ideas that you should start with. So let's say that our author in question, that they've got the right direction, they've got the right mentality, the right frame of mind whenever they're approaching their project, that they need to have their market in mind, that they need to to be writing, you know, something very targeted and focused. So say that we've got that. What would be your next piece of advice for them?
Well, in terms of writing, I mean, I use software called Scrivener, which
I think author's software of choice.
Yeah, I think most professional authors who do this for a living who are under 60 you know, will probably use this. I know a lot of the older authors are just like, no, I still hand write my manuscripts. But I'm like, okay, so using Scrivener for nonfiction in particular, I mean, I use it for fiction as well, but for nonfiction in particular, it's like magic, because what you can do is drag and drop the different chapters. So the first thing I do with nonfiction is in Scrivener, if you think about it a bit like a file path with where you can just put lots of single lines that kind of like headers. So I say, okay, so this is my, let's take the book, How to Market a Book, which is out this week. You know, I'm like, okay, I'm going to write a book on marketing. Or, you know, what are some of the chapters that are going to go in there? And I literally just brain dump into this Scrivener document. And I might do this, like I've got about 4 different Scrivener documents at that point for a ton of different books that I have are not even on my schedule. But whenever I get ideas, I can just go dump them in that folder. So with the marketing book, it's like, okay, so paid advertising on Amazon, that has to be a chapter. So I put that in. Podcasting, that's another chapter. You know, those are two very different things. Those are two chapters. You know, the marketing mindset, that would be another chapter. So you basically just come up with your chapter headings, but you don't have to worry about the order that the book will be in. And then the other thing I like about Scrivener is you can change the flags on each of these kind of little mini documents within the project. So it's much easier to sit down and write one chapter on podcasting. So just say, right, I'm going to sit down now and write 2,000 words on podcasting. And then I change my little flag on Scrivener to like yellow. And then once all
can
my...
I hate to interrupt while you're on a roll, Joanna, but is frag a British slang, or is that something in Scrivener I haven't discovered?
What's a flag? F-L-A-G.
Flag. Sorry.
Like a color coding or a marker, whatever you... But on Scrivener, they are called flags. So I change the color. So basically I end up with a Scrivener document full of these chapters which are marked yellow, which means there's something in them and it's half decent. And then I look at the whole book as a whole and I start to drag and drop the chapters around into a journey that makes sense, because this is so important for nonfiction as well as fiction. You have to take the reader on a journey. You can't just be like, you know, chapter one, podcasting. No, you have to ease people into a book through, you know, an introduction or, you know, however you're going to set up your chapters. So you can drag and drop things around on Scrivener. And then what I do once I've written that messy first draft is I actually print it out and I do my first edit by hand. I actually, you know, on pen with paper, go through and sort of scribble things and hand edit. And then I put all my changes back into Scrivener. And I might repeat that process depending on what needs doing. But generally, I get my structure pretty right just within Scrivener. And then I go through an editing process, which we can talk about. But my main tip is use Scrivener, sort out your table of contents, you know, fill in the table of contents, and then juggle it around to make it a journey for the reader.
Yeah, Joanna, let me take a minute to talk about just how important that process is. So I call it writing the book organically. So what you're doing intuitively, this is probably because you're naturally a creative person with a creative mind. So what you are doing is creating the bits and pieces and then stringing them together and then making sense of all the material that you have. Whenever I'm working with business authors, coaching or editing or ghostwriting, what I've found that so many, and I don't know if this is unique to business authors, or if this is, you know, just a problem that most people have, but they try to start with the structure of the book. This is how the book should flow. This is the logical sequence of steps. This is what chapter one should be. This is what chapter two should be. So they start with the structure and then they try to fill in the content. And it's just so much harder to do that way. It seems like that should be the way you build a book, but actually the smarter way is what you do, which is you start with all your thoughts and the content, and then you work backwards. Okay, now that I have all of this, how can I put it in such a way that it makes sense? How can I find the structure that is natural to the content that I have versus let me create a structure for the book and then force my content into that structure?
Yeah, and I think coming back to the journey of the reader is so important, because many people who are your clients and business owners and listeners, they know so much. And if you know so much, your order will never be the order that somebody new to this will want it, because, you know, they are behind you in terms of their knowledge and you have to, you know, sort of ramp them into that education. So what you think might be the most important thing and you have to put it in chapter one probably needs to go further on in the book once you've kind of worked up to that. The other thing I think that business writers often forget is that people want personal stories to anchor the information into. Like, you know, even my books, you know, How to Make a Living with Your Writing, it's not just bang, 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 here's how to make a living with your writing. It's my story of how I do it. And that's also something that you can weave in to the beginning, because it's like people need to know why they care, and people need to know why you're the right person to share this. And also, I also find that the introduction to a book is often the last thing that you write, because you don't necessarily know what's in it and things have changed by the end. So these are things that can emerge from the book as well. And that will also make it much richer. I mean, my experience is that as you might be an outliner, you might have that structure in your head, but until you actually write those chapters, or I know that you do interviews with people and get transcripts, it may be that buried within the sixth hour of the interview is something that actually ends up being the first chapter, because it's so right for, you know, anchoring the book into personal experience. And you can't necessarily find that until you're partially through the process. So I think for most, you know, for most people, it's okay. You can be a control freak with your business. You can run your business hardcore, but with your creative process, you do need to allow for emergence of themes and stories and stuff that comes up as you go through the writing process.
Yeah, because the act of creating a book is fundamentally different than writing a report or writing a white paper or writing an academic paper or a thesis, because with those things there is a structure and it is, you know, pretty cut and dry. But the nature of a book is more fluid. We expect a book to be more comprehensive, and with something as small as a white paper or a market report or something, you can just focus on the information. But with a book, the size of a book is that it starts, you know, becoming its own animal. And so if you try to impose your own structure and order, like you say, try to be a control freak, the book is going to push back. It's almost its own personality, its own entity, and you have to give it some space to breathe. You have to allow, I forgot who it was, but they said that the act of creation shapes not only the creation, but the creation shapes the creator. You have to allow the book to change you a little bit. And I think that that's for you and me, because we're professional writers, we're okay with that. But I think that that's a pretty new experience for a lot of people who maybe haven't, you know, really done a whole lot of creative work like writing for a living.
Oh, well, my opinion is that business is incredibly creative. So if people listening don't think they are creative, I believe the word, you know, creative absolutely applies to those who have created a business, those who have created jobs or created wealth, you know, or if you've created a new product in the world. There's this myth that, you know, creative is just applied to people who write or do music or paint or whatever. But, you know, to me, the business is incredibly creative. So I would embrace that and say, okay, if you're a business owner and you want to write a book, you created a business from your head. You've created assets from your head. This is creating an asset from your head. It's just an asset that looks like a book as opposed to an asset that might look like, you know, a team of people or a product or whatever else you've created in the world. So I agree with you, but I want people to try and think about this as exactly the same as creating anything else in the world. You know, creating a relationship, let's say, those of you who are in partnerships or whatever, is you have to put the work in, and then the result of it is something that you may never have expected to happen. So that's kind of the way I like to think of it, is I actually learn what I think through the act of writing a book, which is, you know, can be part of the excitement of the journey. But I understand that it can be scary for people. It's a, certainly used to be scary for me. I used to work as a business consultant. I used to implement accounts payable into large corporates. So I never thought I was creative in that traditional sense. And look how things turned out. So your life can change when you write a book.
Oh, that's an amazing point. And I love the idea of looking at a business or a project or even a relationship as you by engaging in it, things happen and you have to adapt and take that into take that into your plans. You can't say, I'm going to have a business. This is how it's going to run. This is what's going to happen. The mantra, or the new word for the last few years has been pivot. Everything has to pivot. Yeah, but with that, all that really is just you have to adapt to changes as it happens. You've got to roll with the punches, is how you'd say it in the old school. And so people in business or on projects or in a company, they know how to do that. They have to in order to survive and be successful. But you're right, they don't often take that same thinking and apply it to a book. That as you write things and you uncover things or you start pulling information together, the idea for it, the things that happen in it, are going to change. And so you have to change the structure of your book. You have to change your expectations accordingly. Well, Joanna, I would love to sit here and talk for hours more because you've got that kind of information. But I know that that it's getting a little bit late in the evening for you in the UK. So I think that we're probably going to wrap it up here. Is there anything that you'd like to leave the listeners with?
Sure. So if you like the podcast, come on over and join me on my show, the Creative Pen Podcast, which is available on iTunes and Stitcher and all the usual places. I'm at episode 320 now, after years of podcasting. I know, it's kind
of
crazy.
Amazing.
But it's a weekly show on a Monday, and I talk a lot about creative business as well as writing and publishing and book marketing and all that good stuff. Also, come on over to thecreativepen.com/blueprint and you can get a free ebook and video series all about writing and publishing and book marketing and all of that type of thing. So both fiction and nonfiction, if people are interested. And if you have any questions, I'm on Twitter at The Creative Pen, pen with a double N.
Pen with a double N. That's funny. And Joanna, you have been, that's generous. Just those offers in and of themselves are generous of you. And I really appreciate you coming on and sharing so much of your experience and your accumulated knowledge with everyone on the show. And I am looking forward to your new book that's just coming out this week. I'll go get a copy of it here in just a few minutes.
Oh, well, thanks so much for having me on the show, Derek.
It's absolutely a pleasure.